said that a bad habit is like a comfortable bed. Easy to get into, but hard to get out of. So it is with alcoholism and drug addiction. So easy to get in, and so very, very difficult to break. Hi, this is Ned Wicker, and you are listening to Recovery Now. And this afternoon, or this evening, we're going to be talking about the cycle of addiction, not so much the clinical cycle of the addiction itself, what's happening physically, but more emotionally and psychologically, what happens to us if we are not able to break the addictive cycle. Alongside is the Reverend Dan Geeting, the chaplain at Waukesha Memorial Hospital. Dan,
I'm so glad to be here today and be able to talk about this real important topic, and also that we can find hope in the midst of looking about this topic.
Also here, Debbie Wicker, who has been monitoring the internet and always has a lot of questions about things, and I imagine you have a few today.
I sure do.
Well, we're talking about the cycle of addiction, and imagine, if you will, a circle, and on top of the circle is some sort of precipitating event, a triggering event. Now, when people use drugs or alcohol, they do it for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is to party and to have a good time and to feel good. Another is to numb the pain or to self-medicate. And even people that start out in a party mood, in a party atmosphere, and they're having a good time with it, it isn't too long before they are self-medicating, and they're doing it because they don't want to. And that's really the top of the thing, and we want to understand that just a little bit, Dan. And I think a lot of times people aren't really in touch with why they're taking that drink or why they're using.
I think that's true. One of my favorite authors is Gerald May. His book is called Addiction and Grace. And one of his key statements that always grabbed me was the one, to be human is to be addicted. And he went on to explain about the human condition. And we are talking about addiction that primarily, and addictions that can be painful, harmful, destructive. But all of us in our human condition have ways of trying to find comfort, joy, and really anything can become an addiction to somebody. But that cycle seems to play itself out in the human condition. It just is. When you're dealing with alcoholism and drugs, we're dealing with the addictive process that affects all aspects of a person's life and can eventually take that life.
Maybe we could pause a moment and explain one thing. And the way I look at the world, and sometimes it's cockeyed, and I understand that. But addiction is the human condition, just as the author implied. And so remove the stigma. A lot of people say, well, you know, you have a problem with alcohol, you have a problem with drugs. You know, there's a stigma attached to that. If you were to come into the hospital and your leg is broken in 12 places, everybody's going to say, poor baby, and try to give you a little TLC, and we're going to fix the leg and send you home. But with the addiction, there's a stigma attached to that. But it's no different than all of human behavior, all of human nature. So we get into this situation, and sometimes we are able to discern for ourselves that maybe there is a problem here, maybe somebody has brought it up to us, yada, 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 and I'm going to either cut back. How many of you have ever said you're going to cut back? Yeah, I'm not going to use as much, I'm not going to drink as much. Sure, you're not going to, but addiction says otherwise.
And, you know, along with that, when people get to that place where they say, you know, I just need it, I need more, others will say, well, I have been able to use, they recognized a problem, and they were able to quit, and it's over. But that's not the case for many, many people, and they arrive at the place where they know something is wrong, and it's no longer just a benefit, but the benefit starts to turn into a liability for themselves, others, and the people around them.
There are people who can go through treatment alone. I know of cases, it happens every day. Not everybody is like that. And in this cycle, we're sort of looking at this in the absence of a treatment program, in the absence of being in community with other alcoholics and other addicts. This is the go it alone. So you begin to realize that maybe I've got some health issues that I have to think about. Maybe I've got some family issues that are going awry, or things aren't going very well on the job. And you come to this point where you say, well, maybe I need to make some changes. I'm going to pull myself up by my own bootstraps, and I'm going to try harder. And God bless you. If you can do that, this is wonderful. I had a gal in one of my recovery groups who had been sober for 7 years. 7 years. Then one day there was that precipitating event, and she had tried hard and she had succeeded, but we are human beings and we are bound to fail at one time or another. And she wasn't using, but that addictive cycle hadn't changed.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we talk about that addicted cycle, and as you were talking about trying harder, there are people that feel like, oh, I don't want to bother with treatment. I want to keep this private. I can do it myself. And that trying harder. And then also, we live in a society that is so individualistic. We are in a society that doesn't think of the we-ness that's associated with recovery type programs. And we like the theme song, I Did It My Way. And today, as we've talked just briefly, we do see that addiction is part of the human condition, but many times to get that kicked in, there's the triggering event, there's the awareness something is wrong, and then there is that factor of trying harder and managing, cutting back, and also all these type of things that that looks like that. But what happens to many of us when we try harder and it doesn't work? We come up with the big words, two words, the failure. And that's really hard, I think, for any of us to look at something we've tried so hard and we want to get over it, but the addiction has us.
The addiction has us. Human beings fail, let's face it. People ask me all the time, well, if I went into treatment, how many times do I have to go into treatment? Can I go into treatment more than once? Well, yes. How many times does it take? Was it how many, is it? We're all individuals. It all depends. They get to the point and you have that failure. How do you handle that failure? Well, I have the pain of the failure. Now I can go back to trying harder, or I can try to numb that pain. In so many cases, I go back to trying to numb the pain.
And I think what I've seen is that the family dynamic kicks in. And so if I'm a person and I'm married to someone that has a drug addiction problem and they relapse, I assume, oh my gosh, they're always going to have this problem. So I reinforce that it's helpless. They failed. And what I think would be nice if people understood about the cycle of addiction is that it's common for people to relapse, but it doesn't mean that it's hopeless.
I think one of the things that you have mentioned is so true, that sometimes others see people that have failed and they think, well, they'll never get over it. What's the use? It's been my privilege, and I think an honor for me, that recovering people have really mentored me in learning how to live life. There is a wonderful admissions counselor in a treatment center that I knew that he told his story, and he said he was in treatment 26 times. I talked to the nurses that had treated him. They said whenever he came in, they always said, I hope it's not on my shift, because they were scared for his own life. And what is such a miracle, when I last knew him, he was in recovery, enjoying recovery one day at a time, and he was an admissions counselor to a treatment center. So there is hope, and we never want to lose hope. And one of the things that I really like about the 12-step program and recovery is the emphasis. It is one day at a time. I think back on my theological background, and when the children of Israel were in the wilderness, God provided manna every day. And I think in our own lives of pain, brokenness, limitation, and failure, we get grace and hope and help one day at a time when we need it. But one of the things on this whole area of failure is that I learned from recovering people that they would many times talk and journey with somebody that might be in treatment that has had a failure, and they say, how do you view this failure? Just like you were talking about, Ned, and they labeled it a therapeutic slip. Now, we all can maybe joke and say, oh, I just had a therapeutic slip. But for the alcoholic, the recovering addict, when they realize that they could learn so much from the slip, how this happened, and therefore it turns out to be a therapy, and this time in their recovery they have so much more in their computer of experience that they can put that on the assets column of learning how to live one day at a time.
One day at a time, and keeping your eyes on the goal of being in recovery and being returned to sanity and having your life restored. As we record this show, we're a couple of days after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And on Monday night, prior to the game, they had a home run derby. And we were watching Josh Hamilton, the center fielder from the Texas Rangers, put on a classic display of power and consistency. In the first round of that competition, Hamilton knocked out 28 long balls, some of which measured over 500 feet in length, bombs into the upper deck of Yankee Stadium. Now, this is 2008. In 2006, Major League Baseball suspended him for violation of their drug policies. It is a lifestyle that had predated that. I mean, it went back to 2001. He was in a car accident. He started using. He had been in professional baseball for a couple of years. Highly touted prospect of the Tampa Bay Rays. But he got into this drug business and got onto cocaine and to heroin. Got himself in all kinds of trouble. Eventually, of course, he is suspended. And a couple of years ago, they gave him a second chance. You know, he had been out for about 3 years. He went into the minor league system of Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay decided to let him go. He went into the Rule 5 draft. The Chicago Cubs picked him up and immediately traded him to the Cincinnati Reds. He played 90 games for the Cincinnati Reds, recovering heroin addict, and did very well with, you know, 19 home runs, 47 runs batted in. Made the All-Star team after being traded to Texas, and his life is completely turned around. But the cycle, hopefully, in Josh's life has been broken, and he understands that he's an addict. So he had to get something in his life that would break that cycle. And in his case, he attributed all of that to God and to his Christian faith. So that was that in the second step, a power greater than ourselves. Well, how do you define that? For many, many people, that might mean many, many different things. For Josh understood, that power greater than me is my Creator. And step number three, to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, and that God being Christ Jesus. I am turning my life over to him. So that power to break that the cycle that we're talking about has to come from someplace else, because I can't do it. I'm an addict.
But if you think about his original baseball team, Tampa, they thought it was impossible that he would ever recover. Because now he's one of the best baseball players. They put all the time and money, but they thought he will never recover. So they viewed his failure as permanent. And I think a lot of family members look at their loved one that way. And if they have to go into treatment multiple times, they get very tired of it. And they say, we're all doomed because this is never going to get any better.
And in fairness to the family, they have suffered. And the fairness to the ball field, they had had enough. And so, therefore, it was a consequence of his using, which also, by experiencing that consequence, helped, I would dare to say, become aware of the seriousness of the problem and the powerlessness of the disease, but that there is hope. And also, sometimes I think as we look at family systems, if I could just sort of go off on this highway a little bit, is that many times for the recovering person, the hope is there and you can be recovering, but one has to give grace to the family and those around, and that you can accept somebody, you can forgive somebody, but trust takes time. And sometimes when the trust has been broken many times by the disease, a person builds trust back into the penny bank, one penny at a time, one day at a time. And I think that that helps everybody to heal. But I think it's a result of the consequence. But I think in the story of this baseball player, he truly is in touch. And as long as he keeps in touch with powerlessness and unmanageability, he doesn't take his recovery for granted.
I worked with a pastor one time that says, I expect you to do X, but I'm going to inspect what I expect. In the case of Josh, he's tested three times a week by Major League Baseball, and he kind of welcomes this. He said, this is affirmation that I'm doing the right thing, and the people that have put their trust in me, I'm going to affirm that trust and build that back up. It's quite a story. It really, really, truly is. But I'm thinking without that intercession, without that power greater than ourselves, without that something beyond yourself, where is the hope? Where is the ability to truly get through something? And I'm not saying it can't be done, because people have done it. But I think Josh's story is important because it just, however you understand God, however you understand that power greater than yourself, you know, latch onto it. I tell some of my groups, it's like plugging a toaster into the wall. Now, I can put the bread in and push down the lever, but if I don't have the toaster plugged in, I ain't going to get no toast. So what is that power source? It can be a lot of things. There was a gal that I talked to recently who really wanted to get back to her young children. And the relationship with her children, that bond, that spiritual bond that a mother and child have, is very, very powerful for her. She doesn't know how to define it necessarily, but she knows that something's going on there. She knows that there's something at work there, and she's going to hold on to it. That's my juice for the present, as I begin to understand where that power comes from and what it's all about. But you have to start someplace. But so many failures come as a result of somebody saying, well, it's superstition or it's religious mumbo jumbo, and I'm not going to ascribe to it.
One of the things that I want to respond to you on is that recovery is not for lone rangers. There is the we-ness of recovery. There's a fellowship. And yes, a person takes responsibility for their actions and their behaviors, but there is the recovery fellowship. And I do think that step two says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And came to believe is a process. And many people, we have talked about it. What are step two actions? Do I just let go and let God do it? I don't do anything. It's up to God. It's up to my higher power to keep me sober. And the reality is that came to believe that a power greater than self could restore us to sanity. The power's job is the restoring. But I come back to what is my responsibility, and it's making myself available for recovery. Ned, what are some ways that people can make themselves available for recovery?
Available is the operative word. As I tell people all the time, nothing is going to be done in this process without your permission. We have to surrender to the powerlessness. We've lost power over our addiction. It's gone. I am helpless there. I am powerless there. Surrender to that idea. Well, I don't want to surrender. Surrender is failure. Surrender is Lee handing his sword to Grant at Appomattox Courthouse. I don't want to do that. But think in terms of surrender as empowerment. I will, whatever objections I have, whatever negativity I might be storing up, I'm going to let all of it go, and I'm going to allow that power to come in and help. So that's a key first step. I'm going to surrender myself. I'm going to allow somebody to help me. Yes.
And I also believe growth is our goal. It's not perfection. And going back to the action that I as a recovering person have to take, or I as any individual have to take in growing in relation to my higher power to restore me, is number one in recovery. An action, step two action, is putting yourself in places of recovery, listening to recovery people stories, going to meetings, making yourself available. We always said not to go by old playgrounds, playmates, and playthings. Don't put yourself in that environment. Put yourself in a recovery environment.
Isn't that what Josh Hamilton is doing on the road?
Yeah, my understanding is that Josh Hamilton, back to the baseball player, actually has someone travel with him that stops him physically from going into the old places and meeting with the old people. So that, I mean, that's his protection against that.
And Josh, he might have that protection, but eventually the one person that has to say no is him.
That's right.
It's not only the external, but it has to have that inner part. But he has put that cast around him because he knows how powerless he is. And many of us might have to do other things to help us to realize and to keep us headed.
And I think the other thing is that you have to open your mind and your heart. I know people that go into groups and they don't function well in them because they're physically there, but they're not spiritually there, they're not mentally there, their heart is not there. So as much as possible, I think part of it also is opening yourself up, which I think many addictive and alcoholic people have a huge trouble because they've been hiding it so long that their personality tends to say, I'm not going to open up at all. I'm going to do the reverse because then I'm going to get caught. So it's really the reverse that they end up doing.
One of the things that you mentioned is that I have really never seen a person wanting to go to recovery that first doesn't go through some of these stages of putting their whole self into it. A lot of times the symptom of the disease is denial. Denial needs to be broken, and then we come to acceptance or complying, but I'm not putting myself into it. And then finally, the part of surrender is when I put my whole self into the program, and the program works if you work it.
We have a little 1 to 5 scale that we ask people about that. You know, are you in complete denial? Are you total rebellion. In that process where you start to invest yourself, you know, it's moving closer. And then a five is total surrender, and that's where the power comes from.
And it's better for a person to really admit to themselves, I am really resisting this, versus to try to cover that and say, oh, I'm at a five. In reality, the best thing in recovery is brutal honesty, and growth is our goal.
And I guess the question I have is, some of my friends, their husbands are totally not admitting that they have a problem. So I guess, are you saying you can't break the cycle of addiction unless you do admit you have a problem? Is there any way that a person like that can break the cycle of addiction?
A problem? What problem? It doesn't break until you make the first move. You have to decide, I got this problem. That's step number one. Admitted that I was powerless over my addiction. That's huge. I have a problem. It's me, and I'm going to own it. And it's not until that happens that the cycle, you know, that the whole process can start moving. And that's really, again, that's what the 12 steps are all about. Anyway, you bring up a really interesting topic, and we have run out of time. But if I am denying my problem, if I am in complete denial, I don't need help, I don't have a problem, it's your problem, go away, don't bother me. Sometimes as family members or as friends or coworkers, sometimes we have to intervene. And we're going to be talking about that in an upcoming show, about intervention and about what people can do surrounding that addict to get him into treatment. We want to encourage you also to ask us any questions, or we want to hear from you. Our two websites, in case you're listening on on iTunes, our websites are drug-addiction-support.org, or you can go to alcoholism-support.org. There's a form on both of those websites, and you can ask us anything you like. Give us your comments. Give us your feedback. Love to hear from you. So we'll be talking about some of those interventions and upcoming shows. Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Debbie, as always.
Thank you.
And there is hope. You can break that cycle of addiction. There is a power greater than all of us. There is a power that not only is interested in helping you, but loves you very, very dearly. Let that power help. God bless.